your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now, your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, my gosh. Do you know what today is? Does anybody know what today is? Anybody out there know what today is? It's the first Sunday in June, and I think that makes like 11 or 12 years of me being on the wake-up call. Did you know that, Rusty?
No. Way to go.
Yes, first Sunday in June was the first time I ever appeared, and for some reason, everybody in the studio was drunk, and they asked me to come back. So, hands up, clap loud. For WNRN and the powerful positive aspect they have on our community. All right, we are going to talk about other community things today. We're going to talk about the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center down in Nelson County, and what we're going to really focus on is the fact that they are working to be a no-kill animal shelter by the end of 2009. there's a book out there that I read, Redemption, by Nathan Winograd. Betty, is that the proper pronunciation of his last name?
That's right, Rick, but could I correct you on something?
Yes, fire away.
Okay, that our shelter, Almost Home Pet Adoption Center, is no-kill and always has been, but we're working on getting the whole county to be no-kill, and that means that animal control would not euthanize anymore.
Ah, which is an important fact because, as we'll find out throughout the hour, that many areas across the state, from the original start of the American Society for the Prevention and Cruelty to Animals, the ASPCA, which was, and I got to check my notes, started in 1866, started as a no-kill shelter, which has at some point adopted a new name and title, but that's effectively what they were then. And later on, when because it was different. There was a pound, as people know them to be, a shelter for saving animals, and a pound for collecting them and doing the evil deeds that people often think about. And then at some point from 1866 to now, that difference was dropped, and the way that the shelters made their money was by doing both, the collecting of the animals and then doing things when things got full. So we'll get into that in a little bit, but the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center. We have three guests in the studio today. We have Betty Graham, we have Sarah Land, and we have Teddy Wright. All three, everybody's on the board.
That's correct.
Board members from Almost Home, as we'll call it, for throughout the hour. So hopefully you don't have to be a pet owner or a pet lover to be listening, because one of the things that is out there that we'll get through the hour is the fact that anyone can be a pet owner. Anyone who doesn't want to own a pet can contribute in saving a pet in somehow, some manner. All right, so let's jump into things here. Betty, you passed me this book, Redemption, by Nathan Winograd. Why did you want me to read that?
That's actually a book I want our whole board to read, because it really gives you the background on how the no-kill movement got started. And I heard Nathan Winograd speak on more than one occasion, and he's a dynamic person. He does not accept that the only answer to the overpopulation of the pets is to euthanize. He just says that doesn't have to be. It's gone on for years. It hasn't solved the problem. And his whole background is that being no-kill and making the effort to get these animals into homes rather than just say, oh, no, we have to euthanize them. And he's very inspiring. And his book was, it was a to me, something I didn't know about, how the U.S. Humane and the American Humane and the ASPCA, how they started out to prevent cruelty to animals, and then somehow they just became involved in putting down all these excess animals, and it became a common practice, and it was just, you know, everyone said, there's no way you can do it. Well, Nathan Weinograd said, oh, no, that's not true, and he shows how you can become no-kill and put your effort into finding homes and spaying and neutering, and, you know, we can go into some of the details, but he's just a very inspiring person.
Well, let's do a little history here, and you and I have both read the book. I don't know if Teddy and Sarah have had an opportunity to read the book yet. As I mentioned, the ASPCA was started in 1866. Henry Berg, is that the proper pronunciation of his name?
Yeah, and he really started it with the idea of preventing cruelty to the horses that were, it was in New York City. And there were a lot of horse-drawn vehicles, and there was a lot of cruelty to the horses. And he started with, you know, that part of, you know, trying to help these horses, and then went into other animals as well.
And at some point, I mean, there was a difference, as I already mentioned. There were separate areas. He started up the ASPCA, which was for animal welfare, and there was a difference, a different group for animal control.
Right.
Which, I guess the nickname is the pound. And there were, it's actually sort of nauseating to read that section of the book and the ways that were used to kill the excessive, at that point, excessive amounts of dogs. And it got to the time period where the pound paid people for the number of dogs that were collected, their employees.
It's pretty awful.
And so they were doing things like taking dogs that were cared for. They weren't taking loose dogs. They were taking, and whether it's true or not, they were taking dogs out of the hands of their owners so that they had another dog to turn them in. They made it sound like recycling cans, almost, where you got paid by, you know, by the total weight that you collected or the number that you brought in. But they were separate organizations, the pound versus the animal welfare. And then I think three or four other areas, I want to say Philadelphia and a couple other cities, opened up their own animal welfare. But these places, Henry Berg was very wealthy. And a couple of these other cities that had animal welfare did not have the money because they were spending more than they were taking in, correct?
Yes.
And so can you tell us what happened, how they, what they ended up doing?
Well, I think that they began to feel that these shelters, like the ASPCA, would do, you know, the job of handling all of the problem with the animals. And this has been the case, like, in Nelson and in Albemarle and many areas where it became common practice to contract the SPCAs to handle animal control as well. And I know we did that. The Nelson Humane Society was contracted to handle the shelter, the Nelson County Animal Control Shelter, for 7 years. And when we came in, there had been virtually no adoptions. Everything was euthanized. And that wasn't what we wanted, and so we worked very hard to be open every day and to invite the public and to pick out the animals we thought were the most adoptable. And so we actually got the adoption rate up to about 40%, which it wasn't what we really wanted, but it was a whole lot better than it was.
And that still means that 60% are being...
60% were being euthanized, even though we were trying so hard to be no-kill.
And you had an interesting point that I heard you make before the show started about euthanasia.
Right. if you ask people, you know, they'll say, well, euthanasia comes from the Greek and it means a painless death. Well, yeah, it might be a painless death, but it's still killing an animal that has the right to live, doesn't deserve to die. I mean, I'm not talking about a real aggressive animal that probably you couldn't take a chance to adopt out. But the average, in the 7 years that I managed the animal control facility, we had one dog that I think bit. But, I mean, the most of them, they were just there because people had too many and they didn't want them. And they got euthanized and they didn't deserve to die.
Yeah, I'm curious, Betty, how many animals do you have?
At my home or at the shelter?
At your home.
Well, I think I have this week 51. I have a lot of foster care animals, and I have 16 animals of my own in the house, 16 dogs and 8 cats.
Now, a lot of people would say that that's unusual.
It probably is unusual, but when I ran animal control and I saw that these animals that didn't deserve to die, I just kept bringing them home. I adopted them, and so some of them are quite old now. Now that we have a no-kill facility of our own, I don't really feel I have to bring them home to save them because they're getting adopted at our facility. But we're still fostering when we're full, and we have a need to have animals taken out of animal control to save them. We foster. So
we'll get into that in just a little bit about fostering. Mm-hmm. Sarah, how many animals do you have at home?
22. They include things like geese and guinea birds. It's not like they're all house pets.
All right, let's talk about how many do you have that you might otherwise find at Almost Home Shelter?
Well, I'm fostering 6 kittens, so that's a big chunk. I have 5 cats of my own, 3 dogs.
Okay. And Teddy, how about you?
I have about 20 dogs, 10 puppies, and 4 cats right now.
And how many of those are fosters?
Well, the puppies are foster. They'll be going up to Massachusetts in a couple weeks. And maybe 8 of the dogs are fosters.
So I guess I'm just curious as to how many other people at the shelter have this workers, board members, et cetera, have this number, because it seems really high. I mean, from however you want to use the word, it seems high for the average family.
Well, we're probably the highest, but I think everybody on our board has several animals at home. We probably have the most, I would say.
And the thing is, when you foster an animal, like most of mine have been fosters, I can't bear to give them up, so I adopt them.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that because it's part of the no-kill methodology that that a gentleman, Richard Avanzino, came up with from San Francisco SPCA, where they went through, Betty, is that correct, that they went through this, once things left Henry Berg and his start of the ASPCA in 1866, it wasn't that long after he passed away that when this sort of wall between shelter and control was brought down, it went all the way to, 1975 or so, before the San Francisco shelter was put up again to be a no-kill facility?
It was well over 100 years that it was just common practice for all the shelters to just put the animals down. And then when Richard Avanzino came to be the director of the San Francisco SPCA, he had no background in sheltering at all, I don't believe. And he came in and said, you know, why? Why are all these animals just being euthanized? What can we do differently? And so he really went at the problem and said, we're gonna be a no-kill shelter. And he worked closely with the animal control and got them to agree to not put the animals down, to let them go to his facility and to work on low-cost spaying and neutering. And he started a foster care program. And he got a lot of backing from a man who started a fund called the Maddie's Fund. And it gave a lot of money to San Francisco, which helped them to establish a beautiful pet adoption center there. People thought it was so nice that at one point I think they were considering seeing if homeless people would want to live in the place with the dogs because it was such a lovely facility.
I'm going to run down this part really quickly and then ask some questions from it. We'll come back to each of these parts of the no-kill theory in more detail throughout the hour. By the way, we are talking about no-kill animal adoption, and we have Betty Graham, Sarah Landon, Teddy Wright from the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center, the animal shelter in Nelson County. The no-kill theory, as I listed it, from Richard Avanzino, who, I believe you're right, Betty, my memory of the book was that he was not a shelter person. He was not an animal lover in any sense. He was a businessman, and he was asked to take over the San Francisco shelter because they were having so many problems, and they wanted someone to help solve them. So he approached it from the bottom line success, and his bottom line was making money for the shelter and putting it in a black ink area for funding, but also he wanted a 0% of the animals killed because anything higher was failure.
Right, and he wanted the support of the public, and he got the support because when people saw that, you know, they didn't want to kill the animals, people were eager to help and be supportive. And we found that to be the case, too, with running our facility. It's the Nelson Humane Society running Almost Home. And when we were able to say that, you know, we're not euthanizing anything, we are no kill, people did want to support us because no one wants to give their money for animals to be killed.
All right. So it started in San Francisco, and I believe it was 1975 or certainly within a year or two of that time period. He began adoption programs, which was taking the animals to the public rather than awaiting the potential owners to come to the shelter. And I know that that's done around here where you might go to the pet store and find someone with two or three dogs or cats there. You can go to the county fairs or other places like that. Partnership with rescue groups and creating foster homes. All three of you mentioned that by adopting, but by fostering the animals yourself, which making them healthier until there is a space for them at the shelter, you end up keeping them because you fall in love with them yourself. There's a TNR program for feral cats, trap, neuter, release. Feral cats. A lot of people think of feral cats as a bad thing, but other people know them as barn cats or alley cats, and you sort of take on, they have much more of a life worth saving term when you use that rather than feral. Sounds like some disease-laden animal. But the TNR, Trap, Neuter, Release program, letting the volunteers understand that killing any pet is a failure, which is something that he did. Socialization, getting the animals who have not been around people around them so that they are more comfortable. And then one of the ones that, probably the one that struck me the most is providing low-cost spay and neuter for every animal. I found it unusual that if you went to adopt a dog or a cat, it had not yet been spayed or neutered, and you took it home and you were expected as the owner to provide that regardless of your age, your income, etc. And then if you failed to do so, then you had, you know, X number of animals that were now back into the system. So we're going to get into all these throughout the hour. You're welcome to call up and ask your own questions from Sarah or Teddy or Betty from the Nelson County Shelter at Almost Home, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Teddy, I'll ask you, what are the adoption hours at Almost Home? Because one of the things that was brought to light, and whether I think this was by Nathan Winograd, who wrote Redemption, is that you couldn't just have these short-term hours that were convenient to the staff at the shelter. You had to be open on weekends. You had to have hours that were available after work for the normal, you know, 9-to-5 individual so that they could come in and see the animals. What are the hours at Almost Home?
Right now we're open every day, 1 until 4. When we were opening, we really did want to have maybe 2 days a week where we stayed open until 7 o'clock or, you know, but because we're very short on volunteers, we cut it down to 1 to 4. We often do meet people there. If they call, we'll meet them different hours, but we're quite busy. We have a lot of animals there, so to get them cleaned up and everything ready by 1, we're doing good.
What about weekends?
Every day. We're open 7 days a week, 1 until 4.
And, Sarah, you're shorthanded on volunteers, right?
Always.
Always. So what do volunteers do? What's the expectation? If I want to come down and volunteer, what are some of my... what are my roles? What sort of training do I have to get? What happens at that end?
Well, we need people to walk dogs. We need people to take care of the cats. We need foster volunteers. We need people to help socialize puppies. We need volunteers that are willing to go to the PetSmart in Waynesboro or to help care for the kittens that are available at Pet Forum.
What are you doing at PetSmart in Waynesboro? Is that where you get your food or something?
No, they're lovely, and they let us bring a couple of dogs every Sunday to try to adopt.
So that's what we're talking about. We're
taking the animals.
Where
to
Nathan
the
Winograd was talking about taking the animals to the people rather than them just coming to your one location within the county.
Correct. We also have people taking animals to the Nellisford Farmers Market, to the Nelson.
Oh, no, that sounds cool.
Very cool. We also are trying to take animals to the Nelson County Festival, which is the 28th and 29th of June.
All right. So the Almost Home Center is doing some of that. It sounds like that the hours could be improved, but you need more volunteers to do that.
Desperately.
And but you are taking people, or taking pets to the people. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that both Nathan Winograd, who wrote Redemption, very interesting book, I think you really should purchase it. We'll get into this throughout the rest of the program.
We just ordered some copies for our board so that we're all going to be reading the book.
I found it, as we touched on early in the program, is that the no-kill theory is not everyone's for it. The Humane Society, the national ASPCA, say... No, it's not the way to go.
Well, I think they're beginning to see, I think they're beginning to accept that this isn't going away, this no-kill movement. This is here to stay. And I think that they're slowly coming around. There's still a long way to go because if there are so many animals still being given up, it's a challenge now. Like since January, we started, I guess, 3 years ago, we passed a goal in our on our board that we wanted to see the whole county of Nelson become no-kill. So what we're doing is going over every week and seeing the animals that are at the animal control facility, taking pictures of them, putting them up on the website, sending them off to rescues to see if we can get some help with other places being able to take some.
Yeah, Teddy, you said you didn't say the word rescue, but I guess I assumed from reading the book you got 10 puppies going off to Massachusetts?
We have a puppy rescue program where I think we send about 250 puppies a year up to Massachusetts.
Why to Massachusetts?
Well, they spay and neuter, so they don't have any spare puppies of their own.
Okay.
They have a very, I think this is true about them, they have a license fee that's much more expensive if you don't spay or neuter your dog. In other words, they might charge $50 a year for a license for an unspayed dog and $5 a year for a license for a spayed dog. So people have incentive to spay and neuter up there.
So the puppies get adopted immediately.
And so, yeah, by the time, I mean, literally in one day, usually, if they haven't had many puppies, they will be adopted in one day.
All right, 11:23 here on the program with board members from the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center. Let me take a moment and give you the weather, because everybody needs to know the weather for this. There is a heat advisory from noon until about 11 p.m. on Monday, until 8 p.m. Monday in Richmond. Today it's mostly sunny. There is a 20% chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms. Highs 95 to 100. Partly cloudy tonight. Slight chance of showers and thunderstorms as well. Lows 65 to 70. Lower 70s in Richmond. Sunny and hot tomorrow. Highs 95 to 100. Heat index 105 and even warmer in Richmond. Right now, sun everywhere. 87 in the valley. 88 in Lynchburg. 96 in Richmond. 88 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support. You can get all your gear for spring travel, including sandals, shorts, duffel bags, and cool sun hats. You'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville and at BRMS.com. And you probably do need that cool sun hat the next few days. Back in action with folks from the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center from Nelson County as we talk about the no-kill theory for your animals. And I continue to be amazed at the fact that the no-kill methods are battled by the groups that you would typically support, the Humane Society, the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Betty, explain this to me in, you know, four or five sentences. Why would they be against it?
Well, I think that the main reason is because they think that it's impossible to find homes for all of the animals, and that's the way I came into thinking that when I first started managing animal control in Nelson, I thought there's no way that we can find homes for all these animals, and so I just accepted that also, that, you know, half of them will have to be put down, and that's what we did. But it's been shown that, you know, if you really put the effort in, and if you have good spay-neuter programs, and if you have good open hours, and if you publicize, and if you take them to different places, that you can work towards not euthanizing. And so that's, you know, what we're doing. But there's some of the shelters that are handling animal control, and they said, well, you know, we can't say we're full, we can't take anything. They have to be able to take it in. And so they say, if you have to be able to take it in, then you're going to have to euthanize. And they accept that because that's been the practice over the years. But Nathan Weinegrad showed that that doesn't have to be, and he went into a shelter up in Ithaca, New York, which had been a kill shelter, and he turned that completely around, and they're not euthanizing, not even feral cats. And he was a big influence for the people in Charlottesville, and so their shelter now has gone no-kill. And I think this is the trend, and I think more and more shelters are going to see that if you don't say that it's acceptable and the right thing and the only way to euthanize animals, they'll work to find other ways to save them. And that's, you know, what we're doing.
All right, we have a call. Let me get everybody set. Everybody got their headphones on? All right. We have Jim from Charlottesville. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well.
Good. I had a question on the volume of animals that come through the shelter on an annual basis.
Yeah, that's a great question because, you know, I have this vision when they talk about if you have too many, so everyone in needs one on the way out. That's why the shelter's running things from the old way. That's why they euthanize them, right? If your shelter can only hold 100 and number 101 comes in, then somebody has to go, correct?
Right, and that's still the way it is at our animal control facility. They have a limited number of runs, and when they're full, what we do is we try to take some out. Even if we're full, if we have foster care homes lined up, we can take some of their animals and put them in a foster home. But if they're full, they will start by euthanizing the ones that I think are less adoptable.
What qualifies as less adoptable?
Well, if an animal tends to be aggressive with people or with other dogs, they would be the first on the list to get put down. And sometimes it's just a case of an animal coming in that's just frightened, And it may appear to be vicious, but it may just be scared and be barking or, you know, showing some signs of aggression, but it's really not a vicious dog. But now, for example, at Almost Home, we have the capacity. We started out by saying that we would take 25 dogs and 25 cats. Well, we saw that wasn't very realistic, and we have probably 50 cats, and we probably have at the moment 35 dogs, and that doesn't include ones that are in foster care. And we take in probably, we are a small facility, so I would say we take in somewhere around 800 or 900 animals a year. And a lot of those would be puppies that are transferred up to this puppy rescue program, about 250 a year. We also house cats at a pet store in Charlottesville, Pet Forum in the Seminole Square Shopping Center. And we probably adopt a couple of hundred of kittens and cats from Pet Forum. And so we take them in, and when we are full, we put a sign saying we're not accepting anymore, but we'll put you on a waiting list, and as soon as we have space, we will bring your animal in if it's an animal that's not aggressive.
How often do you turn over a space?
Not often enough. There's always more willing to bring them in than to take them out. But
all right, Jim, thanks. You got another question or anything?
Real quick one, and I'll take my answer off the air. On the fostering side of the business, what is the average foster period of time? And thanks very much.
All right, thanks, Jim.
Great show.
Thanks, Jim.
The average time for fostering, it could be a week, it could be 2 weeks, it could be a month. It depends. If someone can only do it for a week or two, we work with, you know, getting that animal in quicker. With the case of puppies, we have to give our puppies two vaccinations before they can go up to Massachusetts. So puppies are generally in foster care about a month. It doesn't have to be with the same person for a month. We can have them in one place for a week or two and then move them to another place. But we don't keep the puppies at Almost Home because we have a guaranteed home for the puppies, and if we have them at Almost Home, then the adult dogs don't stand much of a chance to get adopted. And so the puppies stay in foster care. It's also more work keeping puppies at a shelter. They just need more space, and there's a lot of cleanup after puppies. So we find it works best to have them in the foster care system.
All right, 11:31 here on the wake-up call. Almost Home Pet Adoption Center, thanks for the call and the questions, Jim. Betty Graham, Teddy Wright, Sarah Landon from the board. And we want to thank 45fix.com for their support today. If you have a home improvement project, there's another way to find a contractor. It's 45fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate no obligation estimates are available anytime. That's 45fix.com, the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. All right, Betty, you mentioned that if you take the puppies to the rescue center because otherwise the adult dogs don't have a chance of being adopted. What are the adult dogs? Sarah, you were telling me earlier that you have a heavy population on one particular type of dogs.
We are overflowing with hounds right now, and it's sort of a common problem that all shelters face.
All shelters face?
I would say that if you went to any shelter, there'd be a significant hound population.
And why is that?
I think that hounds are misunderstood. Often they're used for hunting, and when it's not hunting season, there's no use for the hounds, so they're often relinquished or just left to run, and then they end up in animal control. And I think that there's some misperceptions about hounds. They make amazing family pets. They're affectionate, sweet, get along well with other dogs, like to be around, you know, families, are pretty low maintenance, and I think that people just don't see them that way. But if you think about it, beagles, a great family pet, they're a hound. Dachshunds are hounds. You know, greyhounds are hounds. There's all different kinds.
So people are just, I mean, when you say a beagle is a hound dog, people aren't thinking of that as a hound because it's not taller and doesn't have the, you know, droopy ear, hee-haw vision to him.
Correct.
And I wanted to point that out and use Sarah to do so is because I have a dog, and I have a hound dog that came from Almost Home. And so I should have mentioned that at the start of the hour, but, you know, if you're still listening, we already suckered you into the whole show. And he was fostered. He came in, and we talked earlier about, and this is a national issue, Betty, and back me up on this, that you had mentioned that when the need comes for euthanasia by the shelters that are not using the no-kill system, that they go, that they typically euthanize the vicious dogs, but depending on how little space they have, they also euthanize the dogs that they think won't be adopted.
Right, and that would include hounds. They would think that, you know, and it's true, hounds are harder to place since people have the notion that they can only be hunting dogs. And so they do, and some of the hounds come in pretty poor condition. So.
Right, it's not just that it's a hound dog and that you have more of them, but it's also any dog that comes in with physical issues. And my dog, and I've mentioned Lazarus on the show several times, he's here, crashed out in the studio. Lazarus was brought into Almost Home with what I call the legend of Lazarus. My dog is a type of hound dog that was bred to hunt bears.
He's a plot hound.
That's mm-hmm. right. He's a plot hound, P-L-O-T-T. And every time somebody asks, I always have to, they're like, plot hound? What the heck is that? But he was bred to tree bears for hunters. When you see him now, you'd never believe that because he's all he ever wants is to be pet and rubbed.
And fed.
And fed. That's correct. Hounds do eat like vacuum cleaners. But he came in, and so the legend of Lazarus is that he went on a hunt. He got into a fight with a bear because when he came into the adoption center, he had big scars across him. He had he's blind in one eye. His tail was broken about two-thirds of the way down.
He had Lyme's disease.
Lyme's disease, etc. And if they had been following, if he'd Almost Home had not been following the no-kill procedure, he would have been one of the very first dogs euthanized.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And he is the sweetest thing. He's in the studio today. If you're driving by,
he's
please
a wonderful dog.
Stop by 2250 Old Ivy Road, and you can meet Lazarus.
And if you like Lazarus, we have a girl plot hound, female plot hound, lovely little girl named Melanie. So she's just like Lazarus, but she's in good shape too.
But I also think that Lazarus is a great example of how mellow and sweet and adaptable a hound can be.
And despite the fact that a lot of people think hounds howl,
he doesn't make a peep.
Lazarus doesn't make a peep unless, of course, it's time for food. He'll, you know, come nudge you or something and just wander around with the clicky toenails on my wooden floor. All right, we do have a call from Richard in Lynchburg. Ladies, put on your headphones. Richard, how you doing?
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Comment, question?
Well, I guess it's kind of an observation, and I came in late on the show, so maybe there's something I missed, or maybe I just don't totally understand the no-kill position. Because in conversation just a little while ago, she was saying that if they were full, they would put animals on a waiting list, and then they would take them as they had room, unless the animals were aggressive. So I guess I kind of picked up on that last little state there. So is that kind of a loophole for y'all not to take in animals that are going to be a problem, and you kind of just put them off on the county shelters who are going to euthanize them anyway?
Well,
hey, Betty, hold on a sec. Richard, two things. First of all, if you want to listen to the whole program from the start, www.cvillepodcast.com. Listen to it at your computer if you have one, and it'll you can play the whole program. Second, I'm going to hang up and let Betty talk about the answer, because this is a key factor in who accepts the no-kill procedure and who doesn't, okay?
Okay, I'll just listen on the radio if that's okay.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Richard.
Okay.
Richard, I was going to say that the no-kill philosophy is that you do place adoptable animals. I don't think there are any no-kill shelters that would go ahead and place an aggressive dog that would be apt to injure someone. And so when we say no-kill, it means really basically that no adoptable animal would be euthanized. And you can stretch that, and I'm sure there are shelters that stretch it, so that you could say, well, if a dog is food aggressive, maybe you don't think it's as adoptable. We don't take that attitude at Almost Home. We feel if a dog is food aggressive, we can still work with that, and we can show people how when they're adopting an animal that it does guard its food. We probably wouldn't adopt it to somebody with young children, but an adult can be trained to let the dog eat peacefully, and there isn't a big problem. But we would not adopt an animal that's going to viciously attack somebody.
Well, Richard also asked about, don't you have a loophole in terms of having the waiting list?
Well, people have to be willing to work with us. And, yeah, we'd like to be able to say that everything gets adopted quick enough that we don't have to have a waiting list. But we are a rural county, and lots of people are overloaded with animals, and we don't place them nearly as fast as we would like to. So people do have to be willing to, you know, work with us and be willing to wait for that animal to come in. I mean, they can take it to animal control, and often they have the space to keep it until we can get it. But like I say, they will euthanize if they run out of space and if we can't take the animals in either, if we don't have the space. But we're working towards just the point where no adoptable animal will have to be euthanized. And one thing I wanted to talk about, too, was the emphasis on the spaying and neutering, which is so important. And over the last 2 years, we have spayed for free or for very low cost about 2,000 animals in Nelson County. And the way we're able to do this is, first we started off having some very generous patron sponsor the spaying and neutering, but now we have a very successful thrift shop which is desperately in need of volunteers, I might say. It was one manager is working 6 days a week, and she's unpaid. She's a volunteer, too. But it's so successful that that money is being used to continue to provide free and low-cost spaying and neutering, and we feel that this is going to ultimately be what will prevent the euthanizing of animals, because often what you get at a shelter is four or five dogs brought in to the animal control that were cute little puppies, and now that they're 6 months old and never been trained, and they're pretty full of themselves, and they dump them at the animal control facility. And so if they weren't born in the first place, you wouldn't have to put these animals down.
And that's one thing, and I think I mentioned it, Richard, you can go back and check out your SeavillePodcast.com, is that Mr. Avanzino at the San Francisco shelter was one of the very, very first people to say, wait a minute, we're adopting out animals that haven't been spayed or neutered when they were in our, we had them for a while. We should be doing our part to reduce the number of dogs and cats out there who may return to the shelter. So let's do what we can as well.
And at Almost Home, all of the adult animals are spayed and neutered before they go out of our shelter.
Do you have veterinarians who offer you a discount price who may offer a discount price to someone who comes in because they say, you know, hey, I'm poor or I... Some do something with the shelter?
We have some participating veterinarians in Charlottesville and in Nelson and in Amherst County, actually, that work with us for reduced rates. We also utilize the spay-neuter clinic in Evington, and we also bring in on a monthly basis the Angels of Assisi spay-mobile, which has very low cost spaying and neutering. And we have a volunteer on our board who schedules 50 to 60 animals a month to go on that Angels Spaymobile. So we're trying to really attack the problem from the spay neuter angle as well as adoption to help, you know, prevent euthanizing at our animal control facility.
All right, 11:42 here on the Wake Up Call. Ladies from the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center in Nelson County, Sarah Landon, Betty Graham, Teddy Wright. Feel free to dial us up, ask a question as we talk about the no-kill methods that are surprisingly battled between shelters across the country as to whether that's appropriate or not. Humane Society, ASPCA, not everyone for it. And just in 1997, there was a no-kill article written out there by the Humane Society as being against the no-kill theory.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, Mark Warner opposed John Warner for his Senate seat in 1996, but this year he's looking for his former foe's support as he runs for the seat again. The Hook takes a look. Local resident Pete Myers finally has his theories on the dangers from heating plastic proven too. And are text messages ruining English? The Hook capable of being taken to the pool because it's not quite 451 degrees out there yet. And let's thank Blue Ridge Graphics for letting us be on the air today. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom t-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. And the big man is here, Drew Thompson, in the room for Les Temps Perdue. If French isn't your thing, here at NRN, that means the time's gone by, which is late 80s through 90s alternative music. Tune in for it at noon. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music on WNRN. All right, we got a question for someone who didn't want to go on the air. If someone can't volunteer their time, how else can you help out the shelter? What items do you need to operate?
Well, of course, we always need money.
Number one.
What do you spend the money on? I mean, because they're volunteers, you're not getting money to pay Sarah or Teddy
whatever. We have a few part-time employees that are paid, but we have pretty big vet bills because we treat our animals. In fact, right now I was going to say that we have a need for a home. We've been fostering a little blind pup. He was brought into us when he was 8 weeks old with such badly infected eyes that the eyes had ruptured. And he's now about 6 months old, and he's very sweet. He's been neutered and vaccinated. One eye actually had to be removed. He has one he cannot see out of, but he's a really great little dog, and he needs a home. We have a little deaf poodle, a little toy poodle who's probably about 10. She had some bad teeth, but we had that worked on, and she had a tumor which we had removed.
All right, so I don't have the time. You know, my job, I fly across the country. I don't have time to take a pet or foster one. I can't volunteer. Yeah, I can donate money, but, you know, I just get more out of it by going to spend my money and give you something, you know, physical that I can bring down there and have somebody go, yes.
Well, we're always glad to get donations of flea and tick preventative, Frontline Plus, Advantix.
Not
Hartz.
Was that last part?
Not Hartz.
No, we don't use the Hartz.
Oh, you don't use the Hartz brand.
We use the Frontline Plus.
We like a veterinary formula.
Yeah, and we also like to have treats, dog biscuits. We go through a lot of dog biscuits because we do train our dogs with the dog biscuits. So
what do you train them for?
Well, we train them to when they go out. We train them when they come back and go into their room and sit and get their biscuit, and so they look forward to that going back into their room. Nice air-conditioned room, by the way. So they have it pretty good, even if they stay a while at all.
And I will say that when I got Lazarus, I don't know that Lazarus is any different than the other dogs, but Lazarus, yes, did he pee in my house? Did he poop on my floor? He did. But he was already pretty much house-trained. He just needed to get used to my schedule. He was used to the schedule that he'd been having where, Teddy, I think you said that the shelter opened at 1, so I'm assuming he got walked, you know, late morning, early afternoon kind of thing, and my schedule didn't match up with that. So in a short time period, he realized, dude, we're walking at 8 o'clock, and you got to hold it until I get back at, you know, 6 o'clock. And now he hasn't peed in my house in, you know, 8 months. He can hold it for 12 hours or more.
I should say we're open to the public 1 to 4, but we have volunteers or employees there probably from 8 in the morning till 7 in the evening. So we're there a lot. We're just not able to open it up to the public the whole time.
All right, ladies, I got a call. You want to put your headphones on real quick? I got three women who are concerned about how their hair look with headphone hair. All right, caller, how are you?
Doing fine.
What you got?
How are you all today?
Good, how are you?
Fine, thank you. My name is Doug. I'm calling from Richmond. And I've got a problem with pit bulls, Doberman Pinschers, and Rottweilers. And they're all pretty vicious, or can be at times, and if you're in a park or something and you see one trying to pull at the leash to catch you, I think they should be euthanized. I don't like vicious dogs out in public.
Well,
and, I'll just let y'all take it from there.
Okay, all right, thanks, Doug.
We don't like to discriminate on any particular breed. We feel that a lot has to do with the way the animal has been raised and how responsible the owner is. And we've placed many wonderful pits and Rottweilers, and if they're placed in a responsible home and they're given proper care, there isn't a problem. And often it's because of somebody just letting them run loose and not training them and not giving them proper care.
And Sarah, because those types of dogs, that's not a genetic issue, is it?
No. I think it's completely nurture versus nature. Your Cocker Spaniel or your Schnauzer or your Labrador could bite just as easily.
All right. Doug, I hope you'll learn to... I mean, because I have walked dogs that pull on the leash, and that's just from being interested in the smells that are out there, and because, you know, the dogs live in the house, and so being outside is really exciting. It's kind of like you being happy at Friday, you know, when Friday afternoon comes and you're ready to go. And just because they're pulling at the leash doesn't mean that they're pulling at the leash so they can break it and run over and bite your leg.
No, they all need exercise, and they can be trained to not pull on a leash, and there are special harnesses you can use that prevent them from pulling also. But they do need exercise, and one of the problems when dogs, I think, get bored and are ornery, it's because they haven't had enough exercise.
11:52 on the wake-up call. A few minutes left. If you want to call up and ask a question or make a comment, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks is the toll-free number. Almost Home Pet Adoption Center, the animal shelter from Nelson County, Betty Graham, Sarah Landon, Teddy Wright. Sarah, you had made a point earlier before we went on about wanting to mention summer dog care, and we gave out the weather, and obviously it's really hot, and Betty talks about wanting, you know, the dogs needing to be outside for exercise, etc.
The dogs are just as susceptible as we are, though, to the heat and the humidity, and it's obviously the kindest thing you can do is bring your dog inside. The worst thing you can do is chain your dog to a tree and, you know, set out a bowl of water and hope it'll be happy. That's just not fair. So,
well, why not? I mean, the water's there. The dog can, you know, chase squirrels around the tree if it chooses, or just, you know, lay in the grass, if, because I'm assuming that the tree provides shade.
Hopefully. But I think that your dog is going to get bored and therefore look for something to entertain itself. which causes problems.
I think often, too, dogs have a tendency when they're chained, the chain gets wrapped around the dog's bowl and the water can be dumped and they can go without water, which they need desperately in the heat. It's much better for a dog to be in a fenced area where he can, you know, keep his water, you know, not wrap a chain around the water and have shade available if he can't be brought into a, you know, home and where it's air conditioned, which some of them love. But they can have a good place outside as long as they're, you know, going to have plenty of water. And one thing you can do, I think often people don't think about it, but if you dig a hole and then put your water bowl inside the hole, they're not going to tip it over. They can still, with their paws, get all that water splashed out. When I have a puppy that does that. So it's important that they have lots of water accessible in this heat because they can get dehydrated very quickly.
All right. Just a few, couple minutes left within the hour as we, on the serious downside here, if you want to call up, have 5 minutes left in the program. I do want to talk about the TNR part of the no-kill theory from Richard Avanzino, trap, neuter, and release wild cats. People refer to them as feral, which to me already has this negative word to it. When I think of a feral cat, I think of something clawing me and giving me some dreaded disease, and that's not the case. I guess it's the connotative way of referring to a barn cat or an alley cat. But I found it interesting that when some animal shelter groups or folks who just wanted to take care of an animal that may have problems on its own, finding food, getting water during these hot times, that there were several organizations throughout the country, whether it was law enforcement or humane society, said, no, you shouldn't do that. These animals, you know, you can't do that. You can't give food and water to these animals. And I found that to be really disturbing.
I have to say, Rick, that one of my cats I adopted as a barn cat, he happens to now be my most affectionate pet. So I don't think that all feral cats are condemned to be wild forever.
And the TNR was to trap the cat in a humane way, neuter it so that it did not have more little kittens that might also be loose with no home, and then release it back to where it was because that was what it was used to. It might not have had the socialization skills that your regular house cat might have had.
We've been doing quite a bit of trapping of we have a number of people in the county that start out by feeding a few outside cats. They don't get them spayed or neutered, and before you know it, they have 30, 40, 50, 60 cats. But we actually are working with these people, and we invested in quite a few humane traps, and we go help them set the traps. We take the cats to the spay-neuter clinic to get them spayed or neutered, and then we return them to the home where people are willing to feed them. But at least if they're spayed or neutered, it stops the numbers from multiplying. And so we're singling out places where people are willing to continue to feed them if we help get them spayed or neutered. And we've done, I think, several hundred through this program, which is an ongoing thing, too. The kittens, if you get the kittens when they're young and you bring them in, you can, you know, socialize the kittens. But it's difficult. Sarah is fortunate that cat came around so nicely. I think some of them that have been pretty wild, they want to live that life, and it's hard to tame them. But they're happy to just be fed. And so if they're spayed and neutered, it keeps the numbers down, and they're less apt to You know, if you have lots of them together and nobody's spayed or neutered and they're fighting, and then you have injuries and sickness. And so, you know, the spay-neuter is definitely the answer with these feral cats also. And, you know, I know our animal control doesn't like people to feed them at the dumpsters. Well, I wish people wouldn't dump them at the dumpsters, but often they do. And we have been able to save a lot of them because we have been able to trap them and get them spayed or neutered and place them where someone is willing to let them stay and live their life and, you know, just continue to feed them. And we've gotten them away from the dumpsters. But you also think that feral cats do a good job of keeping down rats and mice, and that's good, too. So
a lot of those dumpster cats have been actual pets. I mean, quickly have come around. People have just dumped their cats.
And one of the things that I found most interesting, again, we started the program by talking about Redemption, a book by Nathan Winograd, about how the the no-kill philosophy came about all the way back to 1866, is that these same groups that do not want any animal killed will say, oh, but the feral cat doesn't count. We don't mean that. We're not talking about the feral cat. But, you know, save the turtle while it's trying to cross the road, and you know all these other things. Oh, don't worry about the minks. You can't kill a mink to make a mink coat. Oh, but the feral cat, whatever. You know, stop feeding and giving it water.
Well, that's why the trap neuter release is the answer with the feral cats too, and they're all wonderful groups like Alley Cat Allies that are, you know, spreading the word and helping people see that there is an answer. They don't have to be just rounded up and killed.
All right, ladies. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
Almost Home Pet Adoption Center. You can call up or stop by right down 29 south towards Lynchburg. What's your road?
29 and Stagebridge Road or 624.
I'm sure you can find them in the phone book to call up looking for volunteers. And it seems to me that people who want to adopt a pet is one thing, but people who want to volunteer to foster a pet would also be a big thing, just to help out.
Well, work
space
at the thrift shop.
There you go. All right, thank you, ladies. Drew Thompson up next with Les Temps-Perdue and Father's Day next week on The Wake-Up Call.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.org. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Michael Strickland. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake-Up Call, only on WNRN.